Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. Happy day before Thanksgiving. Welcome to Ujiria Radio. In the studio today, I have Sam Grass with me and our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brad.
Y'all doing okay this morning?
Yeah, family fun. Day before Thanksgiving, people in town, right?
Absolutely. Getting ready to eat some turkey.
Yeah, my favorite time of the year.
I heard yesterday that 90% of all Americans eat turkey on Thanksgiving Day.
90%?
That's amazing. 90%.
Wow. What are the other 10% eat?
I don't know. Ham. Curry, couscous, shrimp and grits.
I had, one of the other hosts here said, asked me if I was getting ready for my Thanksgiving ribs.
Ribs?
Ribs.
All turkey right. And ribs. I can handle I that.
You like that?
That
ribs?
Combination.
I don't know.
Well, we got a great show this morning, but before we get started, we're actually going to have a little fun because, hearing that statistic on turkey made me a little bit curious. So we're going to do a little turkey trivia this morning.
Okay.
So, all right, we're going to start with something easy. Sam, what's a male turkey called?
A tom.
Oh, good for you. Man. All right, what's a female turkey called?
A hen.
Oh, you're good.
A hen?
A hen.
Wow, how do you know that?
From West Virginia.
Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, we're going to get a little tougher now. The male turkey, does it cluck, gobble, chirp, or peep?
Peep.
No, it gobbles. And what is the hen? What sound does a hen make?
Cluck.
You're good. You got that one. Okay. And what American statesman wanted to make the turkey the national bird?
Abraham Lincoln.
No,
Benjamin Franklin.
Franklin. Abraham Lincoln specified that Thanksgiving would fall on the last Thursday of every month, of every November. But there was a president who changed it to the fourth Thursday in November to make the Christmas shopping season longer. Do you know who that was?
Truman.
I'm not going to give you that much time. Franklin Roosevelt. All right, enough turkey talk.
That was to help us get out of the Depression?
Exactly. So we got a great lineup today, and as usual, we've got some exciting guests, interesting guests. And first up, we have Paul Walker from Universal American. We're also going to be talking to Pam Sheridan from Compassionate Hospice and Stephanie Bascom from Sunrise Johns Creek. So starting out with Paul, good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
To you, too. Thanks for being here this morning. And you had a long drive this morning.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, Paul, you're with Universal American, and potentially some of our listeners may not be familiar with Universal American. Tell us a little bit about your company and what you do there and how you came to be there.
Yes, Universal American is a seniors-focused company that sells Medicare products, a variety of life and health type products, and I'm the vice president general manager for the Georgia market for their Medicare Advantage division.
Excellent. And how long have you been with Universal American?
I'm closing in on my first year.
Okay. Excellent. Tell us a little bit about what you did prior to that, how you came to be here, and give us a little bit of the story.
Okay. My background, I think, is a little bit unique in that I started out with degrees in psychology and was working as a clinician in outpatient settings for the state and then in private settings doing clinical psych-type work for about a decade. And that was right about the time that managed care was starting to happen in the late 1980s, and I had an interest in working on the business side of the organization and started working with managed care administration and learning how to help people from a management perspective as opposed to a clinical perspective.
Paul, tell us, try to describe to us in a short sentence what managed care is.
Managed care is a coordination of healthcare services for a member or a patient to make sure that those folks get the care that they need at the time that they need and the right setting that they need it. So that's a pretty good description, I would say.
And how do you accomplish that with so many different entities and providers involved?
The way Universal American accomplishes it is through a model that is on the PPO product that is pretty physician-centric, primary care-oriented. So Universal American is trying to work toward the standard of complex care coordination in the seniors population and really becoming a leader in care coordination from that perspective.
So how does it play out? Like, let's take a hypothetical person. Can you walk us through how a hypothetical person would engage with you and what pain are they having that you solve?
I'm not sure.
Like, why would someone use your service? Like, what's a typical client of yours profile?
Well, like, for example, right now, every year, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Studies has a time where there is an annual election period, and we're in the annual election period right now where Medicare-eligible seniors can choose to select a Medicare Advantage product.
And so they have Medicare right now? They're a senior?
If you are a Medicare-eligible person,
right,
you would have one of several scenarios. You would either be under traditional Medicare,
right,
which would be kind of like an 80-20 benefit.
Right. Is that the norm? Is that typical for most people?
Most people have traditional Medicare.
Right.
And so that's an 80-20 kind of benefit,
right,
where the member has a cost share of about 20%.
Uh-huh.
And then you can have traditional Medicare with a supplement that picks up the 20%.
Uh-huh.
The issue with the supplements is that the premiums on the supplement tend to increase as you get older.
Right.
And then you can choose a Part C, which is a combination of Part A and B, which is the Medicare Advantage programs, and you can get those with or without prescription coverage, Part D.
And then how does your firm come into play here?
We sell private fee-for-service products and PPO products, and we have a PPO product that we're going live in January in several markets across the state: Atlanta, Fulton and DeKalb, Savannah, Athens, and Columbus.
And how are your products distributed?
We sell products through agents and brokers.
And, Paul, you were speaking earlier of a PPO, and for our listeners, describe to us typically what is a PPO.
A PPO is a preferred provider organization, and it's basically a network of providers that Universal American has contracted with to provide certain services. And we work very closely with the primary care physician, the PCP, to work in the complex care coordination arena that we were talking about earlier.
And who is in the industry? There's this term called gatekeeper. Who is the gatekeeper? Is it the PCP, the primary care physician?
The gatekeeper would really be a misnomer in this instance, because I think of it as a PCP selection on this PPO product. Is if you think of it as how healthcare used to be. When you went to a family doctor, and the family doctor kind of knew everything about
your situation.
Right. And then that family doctor, when you had a problem, you would call your doctor, and that doctor would tell you what you needed, how you would access the healthcare
right, like
arena.
The next step in your care, whatever that
exactly
might be. Right.
So the benefits that are available through Medicare and the options that are available to supplement Medicare can be bewildering. They can be real complex. How can people get educated about what they're entitled to, what their options are, how to decide between options?
I agree, and I think that the easiest way to simplify this from my perspective is to do three things: educate, evaluate your choices, and make a selection. And how you begin to educate yourself is to go to the Medicare.gov website, and they have booklets that they'll mail you on learning about traditional Medicare and what it covers and what it doesn't. They'll talk to you about Part C, the Medicare Advantage programs, and the prescription benefits that are available too. So you can begin by that. Or go to the Universal American website as well, universal-american-medicare.com. And then you can learn about what's available on the Medicare benefits through those websites, both of those websites. And then so once you've educated yourself, you can evaluate what choices might be best for you, given your situation. You can find out, you can learn and see if maybe you're eligible, maybe you're dually eligible. Maybe you can get services through Medicare and Medicaid if you meet certain requirements. And then make those choices and make a selection. What's best for you? Is it traditional Medicare? Is it Medicare with a supplement product? Or is it a Medicare Advantage program?
So many of aging Americans that are Medicare aged, you know, 62 and over at this point, have access to the internet. What would you recommend people do if they don't have access to the internet? So if they can't get on the website, and
is there a phone number or is there a government office they can contact?
We have a phone number that they can call. It's 866-561-4405. That's 866-561-4405, and that's 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern every day.
Mm-hmm. Paul, let's go back to something that you spoke of earlier, being this open enrollment for the Medicare supplement products. Speak to us of why it's so important for our senior listeners to access, to be involved at this point, and to make some choices.
Medicare provides you a time every year to make a decision about whether or not you want to choose a Part C Medicare Advantage program. And that time is November the 15th until December the 31st. So we're right in that annual election period time. So now's the time for you to go out and begin to educate and learn about what's out there and about what might be best for you from a perspective of traditional Medicare or supplement products or the Medicare Advantage type.
So that's the only window of time you have each year to make a change?
Once a year, November 15th until December 31st. So now is your time to do that.
And if a choice is not made, for whatever reason it may be, what are the consequences of that?
You would be placed into traditional Medicare.
Right. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice, right?
There you go.
Okay. In your work, you're dealing with people in an age group that have severe, usually severe physical and medical problems. Tell us something that you find rewarding in what you're doing, and what do you find rewarding in your day?
The reason that I went to work for Universal American is because of the complex care coordination aspect of the care, and I have an elderly mother as well. People, as they get older, tend to develop illness, and some of them have chronic illness and maybe even multiple problems. So the scenario from a health perspective can get more and more serious as people get older. And I like the programs that Universal American has directed towards the senior population.
Very good. And if you have one tip for our listeners, what might that be?
Your annual election period is right now. So educate, evaluate, and make a selection.
Get it done, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. You gave us a phone number a moment ago, but do you want to give us another way to reach you? Or
Your website again?
Website again, yeah.
Yes, the website is www.universal-american-medicare.com.
And one more time on the phone number.
866-561-4405.
Very good. Paul, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thanks
thank
for
you,
having
me. Next up, we have Pam Sheridan. Pam is the community liaison for Compassionate Hospice of Northeast Georgia. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. Gobble, gobble. Cluck, cluck.
There you go. That covered all.
Thanks, Pam. It covers me.
So you, you're from Compassionate Hospice, and you are here because specifically because November is a special month.
It's Tell National Hospice Palliative Care Month. And basically, what we're trying to do is educate the population on hospice, that hospice is not a bad word or a word that denotes incoming death or impending death. Hospice really is more about life. It's more about celebration of life. It's about creating quality, comfort, and palliative care to those with life-limiting illnesses. And what we're trying to do is educate our doctors, our assisted livings, our nursing facilities, that a lot of the residents that reside there or a lot of patients that do have life-limiting illnesses really are hospice appropriate. And the sooner you get the patients on hospice, the better, because their quality of life really goes up.
Is this something that the children of the patient need to know more about, or is it something that the medical provider needs to know more about?
It's really both sides. I think a lot of doctors shy away from the idea of hospice because it's a very difficult conversation to have with family members and patients. Mm-hmm. But I think if the family members knew more about it and were educated about it, then they might be able to broach the subject with the doctors and bring it up before the doctor has to bring it up. A lot of times family members, when you mention hospice to them, when I do my consults with the family members, they nod their head and say, no, you know, mom's not ready for hospice right now. And basically I sit down with them and I ask them why do you feel your mother's not ready for hospice? And the first thing usually out of their mouth is, my mom's not, she's not ready to die. And that's where I have to stop them and say, wait a minute, we're not talking about her dying.
Right.
What we're talking about is having a quality of life that she will have in her remaining years or year or months. We don't know.
Why do you think there's such a misconception?
I think when hospice first started out, it was marketed that way as far as an alternative to death. As far as the education, I think it was probably not as well spread. And now I think that as we get older and as the baby boomer generation is getting older, we're recognizing that death is a part of life. We have birth and we celebrate that. And now I think our society is recognizing that the end time for a family member can be a really amazing time that you can really grow closer to your loved ones. And so people are actually bringing it up and talking about it, and they're not as afraid of it.
Pam, yeah. I can speak personally to that. And I think I mentioned this before. My father, who recently passed away, was in hospice for the last 3.5 years of his life.
Right.
And the quality of life was better than before.
Exactly.
It was the hospice nurse who came in and found the interaction of some of his drug regimens were bad and changed the regimen. And basically, the last 3.5 years, he lived a very good quality of life.
And that's exactly what we're trying to get the word out, is that really with hospice, you're providing extra eyes, extra ears for your loved ones and trying to circumvent any type of additional illness that might put them in the hospital. We're trying, what we focus on, Compassionate focuses on, is taking care of the patients in their home. We have continuous care teams that come in if they get into crisis situations. We're trying to avoid that going back and forth to the emergency room, the family drama and trauma that can happen when you have a loved one with a life-limiting illness, that they're basically constantly on call, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And when you have hospice on board with that family member, basically you don't have to worry about that shoe dropping, because we're going to catch it before it falls to the floor, and we're going to make sure that that loved one and the family is well educated, knows what's going on with this illness, and circumvent any type of crisis situation.
Yeah, that was exactly the scenario with my father. The nurse was the one who came in, and even after he had stabilized and had improved, she was back in the home once every week or once every 2 weeks, checking and making certain and managing. It was a good situation for him.
I mean, it really is. As far as the nurses come in 1 to 2 times a week, the CNAs will come in at least a minimum of 3 times a week. You also have chaplains and you have social workers that also act as a network with that family. So I always joke about it and say it's like a Verizon network underneath that family, lifting the family up.
Yeah, you made the statement to me that the reason that you like Compassionate Hospice so well was that it was just not medically oriented. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I actually started in this industry about a little over a year and a half ago, and my background was in interior design and industrial design. So I basically...
It was a logical transition.
Yes, absolutely. And I decided I really wanted to start volunteering because I've had a lot of loved ones that have used hospice, and I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of hospice. And I went around and looked for a place to volunteer, and I came on board with Compassionate because they have the same philosophy that I do as far as end of life and taking care of your loved ones. The people that I work with at Compassionate, the name Compassionate definitely stands for them, but at the same time, they come in and they create an atmosphere that for the families that they become part of the family. And that's so important when you're dealing with someone else's loved one. They become the additional daughter. They become the cousin, the niece, the nephew. And every year we do, twice a year we do a celebration of life for our patients that have passed. And it's amazing how the nurses go to the celebration of the life and they work with the families, and the families stand up and they'll honor Rhonda or Diana or any of our great nurses that are out there. And they just say, you know what, you're part of our family and you'll always be part of our family. And that speaks highly of just who they are. When I decided to volunteer with them, that's why I came on board with them, because one of my first volunteer events was a celebration of life. And after volunteering with them for about a year, they walked up to me and said, well, you're here all the time. Why don't you just work with us? So that's kind of how I came on board with it. And I've never regretted ever since. It's an amazing, amazing experience.
Do you have any special causes or organizations that you're a part of?
My mother died of breast cancer, so breast cancer is very close to my heart. I have a very, very, very dear friend that has kidney disease, has gone through dialysis, has gone through a transplant. I've walked all the steps with him through that. And so I would say probably kidney disease is another one of my, not my charities, I guess.
There was a situation that we spoke of earlier that had to do with four-legged creatures. Can you tell us about that?
I'm very big into animals and how they can really help and enhance anyone's life. You don't have to be sick to be enhanced by them, obviously. But I've worked with, I had giant schnauzers when I was married, and we used them as therapy dogs. And one of my giant schnauzers went down to 9/11 after the tires fell and basically was there to comfort the families. And Willie, my giant schnauzer, would just stand there for hours as family members would come, and they would just basically drape themselves on him, and he would just stand there and let them do whatever they needed to do to get the relief they needed. I'm right now training. I have a Chow/Retriever mix that I'm trying to train to be a therapy dog. His name is Justice, and he smiles. So I'm trying to get him to go into the nursing facilities. He has a few little obstacles he has to overcome, so we're going to work on those.
Not but, like biting or anything?
No, he jumps up on people, and he has a thing with sniffing places where he shouldn't.
Bad dog.
Not good for a nursing facility, trust me.
My kind of dog.
Yeah. He smiles afterwards, so.
Now, working in hospice, I'm sure it's frustrating. I know I've talked to several people who've gone through hospice. It's one of those things that when they're done, they're always like, I wish I would have known about hospice sooner.
Exactly.
And what are you guys doing to get the word out to, you know, just educate people more that hospice has evolved since maybe they remembered or they misheard what it was like?
I can speak personally for myself in my area. I generally cover the Gwinnett area. What I'm trying to do is go through the churches and talk with church leaders to let them know that this is actually a spiritual thing as well. It's something that it can be implemented in any type of church setting as far as educating. I'm also going, on this radio show,
right.
Doing this. I also basically, I'm kind of loud and boisterous, so I basically, if talking to people, I just let them know exactly what's going on.
Right, one at a time, right? Just one at a time.
One at a time, and it takes one at a time. Right.
Because Sam's experience with his dad, 3.5 years, I'm sure if you ask the average person how long, is that even possible, they wouldn't even think that would be possible.
No, most people think it's 2 weeks.
Right.
And generally, the rule of thumb with hospice is if a physician does not see or think, or there's a possibility that the patient will not be here in 6 months. That's kind of the loosely fitted
rule of thumb.
Exactly.
Right.
But for the most part, the criteria actually to be on hospice is a little more lax than that. And a lot of our patients, we do have patients that have been on for 2 years. Every 90 days, you have to requalify. Mm-hmm. And we do have patients that actually go off hospice because they no longer right. qualify. So a really great story for us is the patient that maybe comes on with cancer and then goes into remission, and we have to say, I'm so sorry, Mr. Smith, but you don't qualify for hospice now.
Right. We had a client in our business with Griswold Special Care where we served them for several years. The guy had been on hospice for 3 years, went off hospice for a year, went back on hospice, but lived another 18 months.
Wow, that's great.
Amazing.
Yeah, the issue there is the way the public needs to look at this is just another set of eyes looking at the situation, and maybe that additional set of eyes will find something that will help. And again, my father is a prime case. Changing a drug regimen allowed him to live a high quality of life for 3.5 years. And quite frankly, if it had not been changed, he would not have lived maybe a year around that point.
It kind of reminds me of my wife, instead of going to an OBGYN, goes to a midwife.
Right.
And it's like a different experience, you know, from a customer service standpoint. And this reminds me of a similar thing. It's more compassionate. There's more, you know, customer service than it would be if
higher
otherwise.
Touch.
Right.
And I also think, too, I mean, yes, hospice does create the quality of life, but then we also have to look at the other part of it is at the end of the life, what hospice also allows is the relationships that you've built with your nurses, with your CNAs, the whole family has, so that when that time comes when Aunt Betty's getting ready to transition, everybody's ready because everybody understands what happens when somebody is actively
right.
dying, and they can be there and really take part in the process as opposed to going outside and hiding from it.
Right.
And I have to say that 99% of the people that I've talked with that have had the experience of hospice and they see the loved one being there if they choose to be there and watch the hospice nurse, it's almost like a ballet or an orchestration because that nurse knows what to look for, is able to let the family know and prepare them so that when the time does come, the family is prepared. And what we also do is after the family passes, give bereavement counseling for a year afterwards.
So that point actually kind of leads into your advice for family members, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. My advice for family members is not to be afraid of hospice and to really look into it and to ask questions. Ask your doctor questions. Ask why would this not benefit my loved one? And just keep the door open and keep your heart open. And I promise with hospice, with any type of palliative comfort care that you can give your loved one, it will really benefit you in the long run.
And before you go, could you define palliative?
Palliative care is just basically comfort care. In other words, we're not seeking aggressive treatment to anything. We're just trying to keep that patient comfortable and stable as possible, and allow that patient to just be.
Pam, how can our listeners contact you?
Compassionate Hospice, the number is 678-717-0969. And we are located in Cumming, Georgia, and we're also located in Midtown Atlanta. So we have two office locations, but that's the main number, 678-717-0969. And anybody can help you. We have a 24-hour, 7 days a week line you can call and ask questions, and we'll be happy to answer them for you.
Is there a website?
It is www.chcmg.com.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Our next guest is Stephanie Bascom. Stephanie is associated with Sunrise Assisted Living Community. She is the community relations director, if I'm correct. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Stephanie, won't you begin by telling us a little of your background, where you're from, and how did you come to be involved with Sunrise?
Well, my background is pretty much sales and marketing. I started in pharmaceutical sales back in New York back in the mid-80s after I graduated college. I lived up in the New England area. And I did sales and marketing in various arenas until I decided with my husband to stay home and raise our 3 girls. And I was home doing the most wonderful job raising them for the last, well, our oldest is 20, so 20 years I was home. But, you know, they needed me less and less, so I decided to get out back into the workforce. And I was approaching the job search from my – I took a spiritual gifts test and came up with service and hospitality as the two things that came out highest for my personality. And I approached a friend who was in the senior industry and asked about it, and he spoke very highly of the senior industry and spoke very highly of Sunrise, where he had been for 11 years. So I forwarded my resume, and a job was open right near our home, and I started with Sunrise of Johns Creek 1 year ago.
Won't you tell us about Sunrise in general, specifically Sunrise of Johns Creek? Probably describe the property. I've been on it. It's a beautiful property. So why don't you try to paint a picture for our listeners?
Well, Sunrise has been in existence since 1981. They actually started the concept of assisted living in this country. Prior to that, you had nursing homes or you cared for your loved one at home. The concept was a European concept, and the founder, Paul Claussen, was from the Netherlands, where he had fond memories of visiting his grandmother and sleeping over his grandmother's assisted living community and just spending time with her there in her home. And he met his wife in college, and she had been a caregiver for her mom, and they got together, and basically they purchased an abandoned nursing home. And then they stripped the walls, they refinished it, they painted it, they gutted it, they did the whole thing themselves. And then they moved in and were the first care managers. And they developed this company over the years. It is now over 400 properties strong in Germany, England, Canada, and America.
Wow. What makes it different than other ones? They have a different feel, don't they?
They do have a different feel. And how they approach care... At the heart of Sunrise is the fighting for seniors, the rights of seniors, equality of seniors. But they truly appreciate that each different Sunrise is only as good as the care managers,
right,
as the person who's actually giving care every day. And the fundamental difference of Sunrise is that we have a designated care manager. And what that means is that the specific care managers are assigned to a number of residents, say 6-7 residents. So every day it's the same care manager that's going to wake up your mom and help her get dressed and help her shower. And it becomes a friend, a
right.
companion.
And there's continuity in...
There's continuity in care, and she gets to know her.
Right.
And by knowing her, she can also tell if something's not quite right today.
Right.
And so she can alert the nursing staff, and she can, you know, maybe make an extra effort to see what's going on with mom. So that's what I call our first line of defense, because she can tell us, you know, right away when something's up, maybe.
Right, where it may not look like something's wrong if you just looked at it by itself. But
exactly.
She can see it over a period of time, so she can notice that some change has occurred.
Exactly. And for the family member, for the adult child, they know exactly who was with mom this morning, so they can call and say, you know, may I speak to Susie and talk with that care manager and say, what did you think? Yesterday I thought she was, you know, not doing so good. And
right.
They can have an intelligent conversation and decide where to go from there.
You have Sunrise. You look at the economy right now, and the economy's not very good. But Sunrise continues to build new properties, and in fact, the property you're in is not even a year old yet. What is it about Sunrise that is causing them to thrive in this economy?
Yeah, my property is brand new. We opened in March. It is a beautiful mansion style, typical Sunrise property. One of the key differences is it's feels so much like a home, like a warm, warm home. When I first started walking there, my teenager walked in and said, when seeing it for the first time, she just goes, oh my, I want to live here. I mean, it's beautiful.
It's a hotel is what it looks like.
A five-star hotel,
yeah,
no
absolutely.
Less. But yeah, no, it is beautiful. But other than having, you know, a coldness of a hotel, it very much has a warm, warm home-like environment to it. And you know, Sunrise has set the standard. And, you know, you can go to other properties and you'll see something here and something there that they've taken from our community, because they do try to follow us. But that's just it. They're following us. It's the leader in the industry, and it provides the best care.
Stephanie, you were speaking of an assisted living, and I know that for our listeners, there's a number of facilities available for the seniors, independent living facilities, assisted living facilities, skilled nursing facilities. Briefly, could you describe each one of those and what would constitute an appropriate person being placed there?
An independent living community will be one where the resident lives on their own, needing very little assistance. The property might offer meals, might offer housekeeping, laundry service, something like that, may or may not, depending on the community. Assisted living offers assistance, as the name implies, and it can be a range of assistance. We have residents that need very little other than we take care of the housekeeping and the laundry and help them with medicines, and they're still driving. And then you have the range that is nearly bedridden. Now, state law in Georgia requires that somebody be ambulatory, in other words, either able to walk, use a walker, you push their own wheelchair, but some form of ambulation on their own in order to go into assisted living. Now, Sunrise's policy is that we will care for the frailest of the frail and allow for them to age in place. So we will file a waiver with the state, allow them to stay once they are no longer mobile. And we will bring in like a hospice company. And like you were saying before, an extra set of eyes, it's also an extra set of hands that will come alongside what we're doing and make it so that they can live in assisted living longer. Then the stage after that is a skilled nursing facility, and that is for somebody who needs maybe some IV treatment or some wound care or some advanced medication that we are not allowed to do.
In the assisted living at Sunrise, is there a medical staff
Yes. We have on staff a nurse who is an RN and two LPNs. So they make up the wellness team. In addition to them, and they are on staff 7 days a week, typically from about 8:30 to 5:30 kind of hours, but they're on call 24/7. And we also have CNAs that are also medical technicians that provide Medicaid 24 hours a day. So they're staffed all the time as well.
Can you tell us what does a day at Sunrise look for one of your residents? Just kind of walk us through and what might they do? Where may they go?
You know, like morning, like 5 in the morning when they wake up to 4 in the afternoon when they go to sleep.
We have in the mornings primarily medication is distributed, that frequent time for medication. They have breakfast at 8 o'clock. After they go to breakfast, we have an exercise class, usually about somewhere between 9 and 10 in the morning, and that will look different for each resident. The ones that are more physically able will be more active, but we have the ones that are in wheelchairs participating as well, and they will use stretch bands or lift a pillow or do something, but they'll participate in any way that they can. Then we have different activities throughout the day. We go out to lunch once a week. Even for our memory care residents, they go out to lunch once a week. And we also have activities in the afternoon. We bring in a lot of musical activities. We bring in a lot of therapy dogs and things like that, in addition to our resident therapy dog, Susie, who lives on the property, who is a 10-year-old chocolate lab, and she has arthritis and gray hair just like the rest of the residents.
Funny.
And we also have therapy cats in our memory floors. We each have therapy cats. But we do activities. Activities can be traditional bingo, of course. But we also have a book club. Our seniors bake homemade dog biscuits for the Humane Society. They also bake chocolate chip cookies for the local fire department.
I hope they don't mix those up.
Nobody's complained so far,
especially
the dogs.
That's right.
But
can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned the memory care unit. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
And this is also very special to Sunrise of Johns Creek as how we deal with our memory care. A lot of the things that people encounter when they go look for a place for their loved one who has a memory issue is that you see there's a range. There's a huge range in memory issues. If you take Alzheimer's can last 3 to 20 years, and it goes through multiple stages. And there is no set rule for how long anyone stays in any one of these stages. And the stages are extremely difficult. And I don't have a medical background, so I won't get into the specifics of each stage. But suffice it to say that the person with early memory loss and the person with a full-blown late-stage Alzheimer's looks very different. So someone looking for an assisted living community goes into the Alzheimer section and sees people who are nonverbal, hunched over in wheelchairs, and, you know, all the classic symptoms that you dread. And they see their parent who is still verbal and moving around and somewhat active, and they say, this is not for me, and now what am I going to do? At Sunrise of Johns Creek, we have the flexibility, being a new building and a large building, we have split the memory care department. So we have our residents who have early to middle stage memory loss in one neighborhood and middle to late stage Alzheimer's on another neighborhood. And what it allows us to do is take those residents with the early stages, and we have, it's called Terrace Club, and it's a very structured activity program. It's got at least eight structured activities a day, 2 spiritual, 2 social, 2 physical, 2 mental. It's very one-on-one kind of activity grouping, and we combine it with a menu that's based around the brain foods, you know, rich in omega-3s, high in antioxidants. Basically, we've taken the research and implemented in this neighborhood. And the residents are encouraged to do as much as they can for themselves. We have dinner up there, family style. They set the table. They pass the dishes. They work with each other. They help each other. They're all, you know, in a similar situation, so they encourage each other. And we've also had huge success. The whole idea is to stall the memory loss process because it's degenerative, but you can't regain it, but we can stall it. And we've had some success with our residents who were floundering basically at home because they are just withdrawing, and we've rejuvenated them, and they've come back to life.
Tell us, if you can, what is the single item that you find the most rewarding in what you're doing, Stephanie?
I think I like Terrace Club a lot because of that. Like I said, we bring them back to life. I feel that I'm offering hope. Here are families who, you know, maybe haven't gotten used to this whole memory loss idea in their loved one yet. And we give them a little bit of their parent back or their spouse back because they start to see them come alive and get excited and laugh and be happy again. And it gives them hope that they're not one step away from, you know, nonverbalness.
Is there one story that you could share with us?
Well, yeah, there's one gentleman. He came in at a 14 out of 30 on his it's a memory test, a cognitive test that doctors typically give. And after a couple months with us, he is back up to a 25 out of 30. And the reason it's so wonderful is he's got a wonderful personality. He was a radio and TV entertainer in Mississippi in the 50s and 60s and actually ran for Congress in the 70s. And so he's got a very outgoing, gregarious personality. And when he first came in, basically just due to lack of structure and withdrawing, he was not eating properly. He wasn't sleeping properly. He was physically a mess. And he has just improved so much because we've got him on a structure. He's doing activities. He's eating during the day regularly. He's sleeping at night. And I come out of my office, and he's on the floor. And, of course, I panic when you see a senior on the floor. And I look at him. I said, did you fall, or are you down there on purpose? And all of a sudden, he starts doing his crunches again. He's back doing crunches. His family has brought him in an exercise bike that he gets on for a half hour every day, and he's just physically doing wonderfully.
you know, in my dealings with the seniors, I find that aspect of ambulation, mobility, exercise, it does wonders. I go back to my own family a lot, and I apologize to our listeners for that. But one of the things for my father, he wanted to sit in his chair all day long. That's all he wanted to do. And we finally demanded, we didn't ask him, we demanded, we told him, you're going to get up, you're going to go outside, mm-hmm. you're going to go to the porch. They have a very nice porch. He never wanted to do that. But every day we'd make him, every day he'd go out there, and when he'd come back 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes later, he felt better and he was in a better mood.
I think we underestimate how much the physical and the mental are connected.
And what about a tip for our listeners?
If you have a senior who is starting to have memory loss or even physical handicap, don't do anything for them that they can do themselves. Because if you, especially with memory loss, if you lose the memory of how to do something, if you stop doing something, you will lose that memory. And this is like buttoning shirts or getting dressed, things like that. If you're doing that for them, they will forget how to do it, and they will not be able to get that back after a certain point. So you're doing them a disservice by doing too much for them.
That's great advice. And sounds like Sunrise at Johns Creek is not only a great place to live, but also a great place to work.
Yes, it is.
Stephanie, how can our listeners reach you?
Our phone number is 770-814-0505. And the website is www.sunriseseniorliving.com.
Again, Stephanie, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Stephanie.
And thanks to all our guests, Pam and Paul and Stephanie. We appreciate you being here, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in. You can listen to this webcast later at www.ugeriaradio.com. And remember, if children are our nation's greatest asset, seniors are our nation's greatest treasure. Tune in at the same time next week for another great edition of the show. And happy Thanksgiving to you all.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.